What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, all about the Championship this week. Coming up, it's all right on the night for Coventry. We'll get our noses blue and a look ahead to a duo of derbies. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back with you on a Tuesday. We wanted to take in that top two tussle in the Championship on Monday night. And indeed, we did and enjoyed it very much. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined this week just by Adrian Clark. Sam Parkin's on full half-term duties, but we've managed to carve out a little bit of time to talk about all things EFL. How are you doing, Clarky?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, pack the kids off to, you know, so sort of football club. So, we've got a little window during this challenging half-term week to talk footy. But yeah, look, it's... great game. It lived up to the hype, didn't it? Coventry Borough. I was chuffed to get the nod to work on the game, and it didn't disappoint.
All right, well, we shall get into that shortly. We are also going to hear from TalkSport's Ian Danter on all things Birmingham City later. First, though, let me remind you about the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, it's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit GamblerWare for information on responsible gambling. We are still asking for your 5-star reviews, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. All helps us grow the show. If you want to leave a couple of nice words as well, we'd appreciate that too. All right, let's get into Monday night's matchup then. So an emphatic return to winning ways for Coventry City. They ended a run of three without a win by beating Middlesbrough 3-1 at the CBS Arena, thanks to Hadji Wright's hat-trick on Monday night. It means they're a point clear at the summit. Clarky, you were there. The atmosphere really came through, even pre-kickoff, actually, on the telly. What was it like inside the stadium?
Yeah, it was a bit special, actually. Yeah, it felt like a big game the moment you got in there. I was on the EFL All Access show from 6. So I was in there really early. But there's a lot of people in 45 minutes before kickoff. It's like people didn't want to miss anything, and there was a big, obviously, fireworks before the game, and it felt like almost everyone was in their seat 10 minutes before kickoff. It had that vibe of a big game, and the Coventry supporters absolutely brought it. They brought the energy, and the team delivered, didn't they? So yeah, it was a real delight to be there. And gotta say, like, in terms of the quality of the game and the speed of the match, it leapt off the page, particularly the speed, because I was almost out of breath watching it. You know, that was a seriously fast paced championship game.
And is some of that, I'm always fascinated in the role that supporters can actually play on a team's performance. Is some of that because they've got so keyed up before kickoff? Does that bleed through to players? I guess it's all individual, isn't it, how much you want to take from that?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah, definitely it's individual, but of course it helps. Yeah, when there's that sort of wall of noise, you get that, you hear the big roar ahead of kickoff, you just know that it's a big game, and it, I think it gets the adrenaline going. It sort of puts hairs on your arm standing up. It's one of those where you think, wow, got to deliver tonight. And I think that definitely helped the match. But no, fair play to the Coventry fans. The thing is with the Sky Blues, they've been so close. They've had such a great journey from League Two all the way up, and then they've not hit the wall, but they've hit a blocking point, haven't they, where they've come so close in two or three seasons, and I just feel like they think it could be our time, this has to be our time, and that's why they left nothing you know out there, did they? They gave it everything, the supporters. And what really struck me actually was even in injury time, it's only a handful of people that left their seats looking to beat the traffic. It was pretty full right up until the final whistle, and that's because I think they were really proud of the performance, and they wanted to let the players and the manager know now how they felt about it, which was great. It was great to see that unity.
So Hadji Wright obviously gets the headlines and the match ball. First goal, nice finish from him, but all about that little piece of Sakamoto skill in the build-up.
Yeah, he was really bright and breezy, wasn't he, Sakamoto? I think he's a really good team player, someone who worked his socks off, but then he's got that little bit of magic. Obviously he did that, he fed in Radoni, and good to see him back in the team, and drives it across, and it's a good finish from Hadji Wright, and he'd already hit the post at that point from a Sakamoto cross. So it was a very front foot start from Coventry. The tactics of the game were so clear. early on. So Middlesbrough are this unbelievable footballing team under Kim Hjelberg that play out from the back, and they one touch, little triangles, they move it upfield. It takes a really brave team to go and press them, because if you go and press them and they play through you, they will destroy you. It's as simple as that. They're that good. So first and foremost, well done Frank Lampard for having the bravery to do it. And secondly, well done the players for executing it perfectly. They absolutely hassled and harried Borough. They won it over and over again inside Borough's half. And I think it spooked them. I really do. And yeah, they probably, you know, in a way, they maybe even deserved to be two up at the break. And then what we saw, Matt, is a flip, a tactical flip in terms of, no, we were not going to do that the whole game. Of course we're not going to do it the whole game. Second half, we'll sit in a bit and we'll let you have it. And when you commit all those bodies forward, we're going to go bang, and we're going to hurt you hard and fast on the break. And they did that just as well as they pressed in the first half.
Yeah, some great quotes from both managers in the aftermath on the respective tactics. Frank Lampard said, "I told them it was an important thing for us to get back on our game. The way we played the first half, we wanted to be very pressy," which I think is a nice way of putting it. Second half, I felt the energy as we go on would be hard, so we went back into more of a block and gave them problems. Kim Hjelberg, nice bit of shade thrown by him here. Sure. Terrible timings, terrible goals. They don't have to play in our half, but they've almost got two goals from never being there. So it could have been different if Whittaker had taken that chance right at the start of the second half. But that second goal, I mean, Kim Hjelberg will be tearing his hair out about that, right? Keeper yeah. boots upfield. You can call it a great assist if you like, but if I'm those two Middlesbrough defenders, or even Sol Brin, actually, I'm thinking that goal probably shouldn't be scored.
Yeah, definitely. I was in the middle of saying how Coventry had sort of been pushed back, and they were resorting to playing long balls, and then they go and score literally mid-sentence from a long ball. And Rushworth was, he can boom it. Goodness me. He can absolutely leather it. And
you wouldn't think from looking at him, would you? Quite a slight fella.
but great technique. I think it's mainly on Luke Ayling, you know, letting the ball bounce. You know, I think Milanda, the other centre half, is a top sign. You know, I really think he's quality, but it's a tough test for him against Wright in that form. Yeah, that letting the ball bounce was a problem. Could the keeper come out and help out? Maybe, because you look at where he takes the shot on, you know, on the half volley, he's well inside the box. But I really think it's your centre half that's got to deal with that. And unfortunately, he didn't. But what a finish. Like, left foot, half volley, never looked like missing. It was top draw. Do you know what? Even if Hadji Wright hadn't scored in the game, I'd have still given him an 8 or a 9 out of 10, because he was a constant menace, and he worked really hard out of possession. And that's why he's playing up front and not Ellis Sims. He's a real grafter.
So you called that a half volley. What about Riley McGree's goal? This is midway through the second half. So he cracks it in. Ball's bounced up quite high off the ground there. I'm not sure if that quite meets the threshold of half volley.
No, that's a volley. That is a volley all day long. Obviously, a proper volley is where it doesn't bounce at all. But no, that's in the air. It's there to hit on the volley. Now, half volley is where you hit it as it's bouncing, really, don't you? And you sort of connect with it. So yeah, now that was a great finish. I mean, I haven't watched the goals back. You know, I got back quite late. And yeah, I just haven't watched the highlights. So I'm going off memory. But he absolutely lashed it in, didn't he? And at that point, you thought, wow, okay, game on. But it was the instant response, wasn't it? And he made the subs, Frank Lampard. And instantly, one of those subs helps to win that pen.
Yeah, Borough actually had double the number of shots that Coventry did. They had 71% possession as well. But just after they got themselves back into it, they concede a penalty 17 seconds after the restart from the goal.
Is that how quick it was? Wow.
Yeah, okay. Matt Target handball. Again, Kim Hjelberg talking about that in that post-match quote about how they didn't exactly help themselves. Brilliant penalty, though. Keeper guesses right but doesn't get a sniff, and that now is right two goals behind Vopotnik in the golden boot race. He apparently becomes the fourth player since 2007 to score a hat-trick against the team starting the day in the top of the Championship. Generally, when you go up as champions from this division, you have a 20-goal-a-season man, right? It's sort of a prerequisite.
Yeah, and he's the guy, isn't he? And yeah, look, he's had a bit of a dip, and it hasn't maybe been as prolific in recent times as it looked like it might be early on in the season. But yeah, he is a proper threat. He's got it all, really. He's got the power, the pace. He'll work hard. He can finish, as we saw last night. He's good in the air. He's good on the deck. So no, I think obviously. obviously it's easy to say they've just gone back to the top of the league, but they look a proper team. They can play in different ways, and that's what I think maybe sets them apart from Borough. They can tactically change things, whereas Borough under Helberg, they are amazing, and I still think they're breathtaking to watch and scintillating, and I love the tactics, but it feels like that they'll go up playing that way, or they'll fail playing that way. You know, I don't know whether there's a plan B that's going to be there from Helberg. So let's see how they respond. But look, but Coventry have now done the double on Borough. They did the double on Millwall, which is Ipswich that proved to be their nemesis this year. And I'm looking at the fixtures. You know, they've got most of the tough ones out of the way now. They've got Hull away, and then at home, Derby, Preston and Wrexham. They're the toughest four fixtures on the cards for them. So, yeah, they've put themselves in a great spot now, Coventry.
Yeah, you fancy them to win at West Brom at the weekend. As for Borough, six on the spin in terms of victories before this one, but back-to-back home games against Oxford and Leicester, that feels like a decent chance to get back on the horse quickly.
It really does, doesn't it? Obviously, relegation-threatened teams can really, you know, fight and fight, but you'd think there'd be a gulf there. I don't think it'll be a major setback. I believe that they'll carry on doing what they've been doing. They're still a really good team. Hackney's class. I thought Conway started the game really well, faded, unfortunately. The midfield just didn't quite, they were outplayed, I think, by Coventry. Should have mentioned Frank Onyeka, of course, who came in for his debut and was putting a barnstorming display alongside Grimes. So yeah, Borough's midfield will have better days. The centre-backs will have better days. Yeah, I think they were the two. I think they are the two best teams. And even though I've been fancying Ipswich all season, I'm losing a bit of faith in them now. I just think they always seem to just throw in a bit of a no-show, and that's a bit of a concern for McKenna.
All right, that was the Sky Blues. Done. Then we're going to talk about another promotion contender in a slightly darker shade next. We're joined now by our pal and TalkSport's EFL expert, Ian Danter, who's going to catch us up on all things Birmingham City. Dan, it's great to have you back with us. Let's start with the FA Cup on Sunday. I mean, disappointment ultimately, but a decent display against a Premier League side in a feisty tie.
Hello, team. Nice to see you again. Usually when it comes to things like this, the phrase that Birmingham City fans would use is glorious failure. But there's something more deep-rooted in what I saw on Sunday that I'm not really interested in the self-deprecation that comes with a phrase like glorious failure. It just gave an indication of what this side is capable of in the running, and what it should be, frankly, capable of in the running, the way they went about their business. It's given Chris Davis, I would imagine, quite a number of selection headaches for fixtures going forward in the Championship. There was so much to admire. So much to admire. It just makes me happy to see a full stadium making a quite wonderful, unholy racket, and a team doing that support proud. It's been a long time coming, as we've discussed on this show many times before.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've been able to have you on as a Championship concern without talking about miserable things. We've been really interested in Chris Davis on the pod this season. There's been various points in it when we've talked about him potentially being under quite a bit of pressure. He seems to have ridden that now. Are you pleasantly surprised that the club stood by him, and how real do you think that pressure was that was on him?
Well, he had so much credit in the bank from last season that it would have taken a monumentally poor set of results for him to be fired. I mean, it's hard to tell with the Knighthead consortium. You know, sometimes consortia, you know, will fire at will. Mr. Marinakis at your club has shown that, you know, four managers in the season at Forest. But with Tom Wagner, obviously the season of relegation was a bit of an anomaly because you had the Rooney mistake. Mowbray came in, got poorly. Rowett came in, couldn't keep them up. So that was a season of, you know, musical chairs. But Davis showed last season just how a bit of continuity doesn't half help. Carry that into this season. And he's had some, I mean, the sticking point is the away form. There's no getting away from it. If they can do anything about that away form, although the next away assignment is a very tricky one at Norwich on Saturday, then if the away form picks up anything like to the extent that the home form is there, then playoffs is very much within Chris Davis's grasp. But as I mentioned in my first answer, he's got a lot of selection issues, happy selection issues, but issues nonetheless to find that right balance and blend.
I was going to say, Dennis, I mean, there's so many new players as well at Birmingham City, and they look really good, I've got to say. I mean, yeah. for a manager that there were a lot of whispers about him in maybe getting sacked, obviously, early in the season, they didn't half back him in January. Who do you love out of the new signings? Who are the ones that you think are going to be real fans' favourites?
Well, the one that caught my eye on Sunday was John Solis. In defensive midfield, I thought he was colossal. We all know how good Christophe Clara is, and he got the Man of the Match award, and he was typically brilliant in leading the defensive line. But I thought Solis was really solid in that midfield pivot, because Peck isn't around at the moment. He's injured, and he's been very good in that position. So Solis coming in has, you know, quelled any fears that Birmingham fans might have had that we would suddenly have a soft underbelly in front of the back four that could be got at. And Prisca, that's the first I've seen him, you know, for a full, well, obviously got substituted, but for a long spell. And he looked awkward and a good awkward customer to come up against. He obviously needs a goal, much like Kyogo needed a goal desperately and, you know, has failed really to live up to the billing when he arrived. Solis caught the eye most, and Wagner, actually, Kai Wagner at left back.
He's decent, yeah.
How to become accustomed to the hurly-burly of championship football in an instant. I think that's as good an example of any of somebody who integrates instantly into a starting lineup.
You mentioned Wagner there, obviously, Tom Chairman, and it's been a while now, hasn't it? I mean, it was what? Summer 2023 when they took a controlling stake in November last year when they became the 100% owner. So we're well past the honeymoon period, I think, now, aren't we? And it seems to be only positive in terms of Birmingham supporters' reaction to this this ownership group. But they've done everything that they've promised and more so far.
I couldn't agree more, Matt, that they've united the fans, with the players, with the officials, with the staff. It's a very hard thing to do at any club, to have that feeling of unity where everybody is moving in the same direction. Obviously, Tom is not well at the moment. You saw that display of love for him with the banner that was unfurled. That was made for free by a local company, Hollywood Monster, whose CEO I know, Tim Andrews, is a massive blue nose. He made that banner for nothing. Oh, yeah. And any donations that the fans had made went straight to the Stroke Association and other stroke charities. And it was just another example. There were people being a bit sort of snotty about it. And I thought, well, what? This is just about fans coming together to show their appreciation for what Tom Wagner has done and lifted us out of the most horrific decade or so of underachievement and, you know, the worst look to the stadium that was falling apart, a team that was falling apart, a supporter base that was falling apart. Now the place is full again every week. How could you not have anything but the utmost love for what Knighthead as a consortium and Tom Wagner as the spearhead of that have done for us? Because it's a total 180 from what was happening under Birmingham Sports Holdings Limited before that.
Yeah, honestly, it is, because I went there when it was, let's face it, a little bit of a dump, and half the ground was closed and everything. The fan base were disenchanted. Now it's completely a different vibe. It looks lovely. And you've got this new stadium with all the chimneys. What are your thoughts on that, by the way? When I first saw it, I kind of almost laughed because I thought it was so out there. But then I thought, actually, it's unique, it's different. What was your reaction when you saw it? And can the Blue Nose fans fill it?
I think that's predicated, Adrian, on becoming a hardy perennial of the Premier League.
Yeah.
Because that obviously is the ultimate ambition of Tom Wagner and Knighthead, to become a mainstay of the Premier League. We had 50,000 fans at the Virtue Trophy final against Peterborough.
True. Yeah.
And there was a waiting list. Yeah. Now, a lot of those are lapsed supporters. A lot of those are just going along for the day out because they know they can get a ticket. Or they know they've got a good chance of getting a ticket. So the potential is definitely there, but it has to be backed up by sustained good performances and success. The stadium itself, I loved it as soon as I saw it. My first thought actually was for my late dad and granddad, who would have loved to have seen something like that. My granddad in particular, because, you know, he worked on the production lines at, you know, the Rover and, you know, shop steward, and understood the whole industrial heritage of Birmingham going from the 19th into the 20th century. And the chimneys were a big part of that part of the east side of the city. So I completely understand why they're there. Lots of people didn't at the time. Look, chimneys, what's that for? You know, look to your history. Look, you know, look back at what was going on in Birmingham around the time when Birmingham City became a thing, when the name was changed from Small Heath Alliance. So I love it, Adrian. I hope it gets built in the timescale that they're ostensibly thinking of, which is 5 years, which seems ambitious. I think they'll get the stadium done in that time, but there's 140-odd acres of land that the club have purchased. And when you consider that St Andrews, as a complete stadium with car parks and everything, is 9 acres.
Wow.
That gives you an idea just how much they've got to work with to build an academy stadium, training pitches, commercial, housing, restaurants, you know, and they want to turn that stadium into a community hub on non-match days. So it doesn't just sit there when the club aren't playing on match days as a big white elephant, or blue and white elephant, you might say. It's there as a community hub for people to use. And one of the things that really came home to me was they had a sign up, a mock sign up outside the artist's impression of the stadium that said, "Yes, ball games," as opposed to "No ball games," which of course is a sign we see all too often. But they wanted to encourage people to come and use it as a community hub. Music to meet people to play, mothers and dads to take their sons and daughters, you know, and all that. So there's so much good that can come of building a stadium in what is a rundown part of Birmingham. It's only a stone's throw from St Andrews, for those that don't know. It's a quarter of a mile across Garrison Lane from where St Andrews is, and that part of Birmingham needs a hell of a lot of love. So bless them for that, for grasping that nettle, because that side of the city's needed a lot of love for a hell of a long time.
Yeah, looks like you'll be a Premier League concern by the time you get in to that new stadium. Just to finish, I was going to say, tell me who's going up this season. Who's impressed you? I mean, are you going to make the playoffs? Who are your rivals to do so, do you think?
Going back to your original question about the purchases, there is no way that Knighthead made all those purchases to finish 10th.
No, yeah.
They've made these purchases in the window because they want to... I mean, look, the playoffs is within striking distance, but you could say that for 7 or 8 teams who are of exactly the same mindset as us. I watched Middlesbrough against Sheffield United and was frankly terrified about how good they were going forward. But obviously, the game on Monday night at Coventry showed that Coventry can be equally terrifying, and although Hackney's probably one of the best players in the division, he just couldn't bring his influence to bear as much as he would have liked. It's good to see Radoni back on form as well for Coventry. I think he's important. Who's going up? Well, you look at those two, actually, Coventry, Middlesbrough, they do look hard to beat. Ipswich, you've got a couple of games in hand, and they could catch them, but I don't think that back line is quite strong enough to withstand the hurly-burly of the running. Wrexham fascinate me. I think Ollie Rathbone is the most overlooked and underrated championship player this season. I think he's been just wonderful to watch. That's an example of a player coming through EFL clubs, you know, coming through at Rotherham, getting the move to Wrexham and almost becoming indispensable. You've got all these big names around him. You've got Josh Windass. You've got all the big money spent on Sam Smith, Jay Rodriguez coming in. But there's this guy who can win games with these long-range strikes. I like Wrexham quite a lot. And I think they're going to have something to say in the playoffs, potentially.
Wrexham-Birmingham final. There it is.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? That would be... I mean, forget whatever price point they put on the game, because when we won promotion in 2002, it was the £50 million game. what is it now, the £500 million game? And have we got up sort of 100% from 2002? I'd like to think we can get there, chaps. As I said, the away form's got to improve, got to. Can't be at the same win ratio that it is now. The home form can stay as it is, thank you very much. And then we'll see. The playoffs, as they are now, we obviously you must have debated the whole idea of extending the number of teams in it. I'm not quite sure I'm on board with that, but that's for another day. But the playoffs is a magical part of the season, and much as it's like a trip to the dentist, I do want to be a part of it. I do want my club to be involved in it, despite all the collie wobbles that it gives you in your stomach.
Yeah, very familiar with those. Well, a couple of tough away tests to come at Norwich and Millwall, so maybe that'll tell us a bit more about your ambitions. As ever, Dance, we really appreciate your time. When can we hear you on the radio next?
Tuesday night, I'm covering Benfica against Real Madrid in the Champions League for TalkSport 2. And then I've got Celtic against Stuttgart on Thursday evening in the Europa League.
Excellent. I appreciate your time as ever. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Love you lots, guys. Speak later.
Thanks as ever to Ian Danter. We're going to keep the Championship train rolling today and do some previews next. Right, it's double derby delight Championship-wise. Starts under the Friday night lights with a game that tradition dictates. I must refer to as a Lancashire hotpot. It's Blackburn Rovers against Preston North End at Ewood Park. What a start, Clarkie, for Michael O'Neill, that win at QPR at the weekend. What do you make of this dual role where he's going to manage Northern Ireland as well as Blackburn? I'm not sure how I'd feel if I was a Blackburn fan. If I was a Northern Ireland fan, I would be seething.
Yeah. I don't think the Irish would be happy, will they? I can't see how what they've got to gain from it. I mean, he talked about it, it's sharpening him up and that it keeps him in the mix, you know, and watching games and working with players. And I do get that. I do get that. But that prep that he has to use the time to do is going to vanish, isn't it? So I was stunned, really, at the dual role being taken on. But he is a good manager. I don't think there's any doubt about that. With the, you know, sort of Venky ownership, not the most appealing of ownerships to work with. They probably didn't have a great pool to choose from. And he feels like a safe pair of hands, doesn't he? He did do a really good job at Stoke, by and large. I mean, he had an instant impact that kept them up initially, and yeah, there was real signs of promise there before it sort of fell away. So yeah, Yeah, and a great start at Queen's Park Rangers last weekend. So no, actually, I think if he wasn't Northern Ireland manager, you'd say, yeah, very good appointment. Well done, Rovers. But you just wonder, don't you? Especially when it comes to March, when he has to concentrate on the big playoff game. I think it's against Italy, isn't it? Two-legger, you know. So yeah, his mind's going to drift, and that's normal.
I love him having Phil Jones on his staff. That is
class, isn't it? Yeah.
Lovely bit of business.
The old Gurner himself.
He's been good on the radio though, so hopefully we'll still hear him a little bit there too. They have been rubbish at home, only 3 wins from 16 in the league, and they are going to be without Lewis Miller for a long time. Poor chap, Aussie. He's got a serious Achilles injury. He's going to miss the rest of the season, which obviously for him means the World Cup as well. So yeah, thoughts with him.
Yeah, that is a shame. That is a real shame, because he's done very well for them. But look, it opens the door for someone else. Look, they've been pretty solid all season, actually. They're not a bad team defensively. They should be able to sort of keep that going. It's can they score enough goals? Can they create enough chances? And look, at least they've got the strikers fit and well again now. They've got Hashi and Good Johnson available. And of course, they've got Matthijs Jorgensen, who got a great brace actually at the weekend at QPR. Some nice finishes. Morishita looks good as well. He's producing a bit of creativity, and they're not really reliant on Todd Cantwell anymore, which was kind of the case early on in the season. So yeah, I think there's they went 4-4-2, and I reckon they might as well stick with that. Whenever they've been good this season, Rovers, and it hasn't been a lot, they've had two strikers, so I think that has to happen, which kind of freezes out Cantwell, which is a shame for him, because he is a really good player, but he might be the sort of sacrificial lamb really for the greater good here, because I think he's a 10 or nothing really personally. So yeah, he might have to sort of accept a more peripheral role in the coming weeks.
Yeah, O'Neill praising Damian Johnson for initiating that switch to 4-4-2. And for a club that's so poorly run, they do make some decent signings every once in a while. So obviously got somebody decent looking after that for them. Jorgensen, the latest example of that. As we record, and this might change after the midweek matches, but Preston, only goal difference outside the playoffs. Nobody's favourite, Millerton as Majic with the equaliser to snatch a point at home to Watford on Saturday. Remember, he got an 8-match ban for biting Owen Beck when these teams met in September 2024. He's had a 9-match ban for racial abuse since then as well. He really is the worst, isn't he?
He's horrible. He did a headbutt as well recently. He's just back from a headbutt ban.
I mean, what a character. There's come a point, hasn't there, where like either cumulatively the FA go, I'm not sure that we really want this guy, or maybe Preston make that decision, but it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, he needs a mugshot photo. That's what he needs, because he's the bad boy of the EFL. He just needs like one of those prison mugshot sort of photos to be his thing for the telly. You know, everyone else is folding their arms, smiling. He needs to look evil, because that's kind of his character, isn't it? But look, the issue is for Heckingbottom, and I'm sure Heckingbottom will... If I was Heckingbottom, I'd get rid of him, because he is a liability, and I don't see it changing. I just don't see him becoming...
Well, it's like Luis Suarez, but he's not as good as Luis Suarez, right?
Yeah, like he is good and he is sort of worth his place in footballing terms, but it comes a point where you just think you've got to get rid. So I think this will... These will be the last few weeks and months of his time there. But in the meantime, you might as well use him, because he is a threat. He will get your goals. And actually, they've got a few options, haven't they, at the moment? They've got obviously Callum Lang that they brought in as well, who's sort of between a midfield and a striker. You've got Dobbin and Jebison, who started up top at the weekend against Watford. So they've actually got a few goal getters. But I've got to admit, of all the teams that are in the promotion mix, Preston still leave me a bit cold in terms of watching them. I don't see
Picking them to get in the playoffs either, are they? Let's be honest.
I think so. I mean, I just feel like they're going to fall short. They're not... They're a solid team, but they're not pretty to watch particularly. They're not... You know, it's not ugly football, but it's just a little bit meh. And yeah, they've done really well to get to where they've got, but I'm not sure. I also think that they've maybe overachieved a little bit defensively. I know that if you look at the stats and the XG, they've actually let in 8 or 9 fewer goals than XG says they should have done. And a lot of that's to do with Daniel Everson, the goalie who's been outstanding this season, definitely one of the best in the division. Now, he missed the weekend game against Watford. He was injured and he's touch and go for this. So they'll look to get him back in. I think Di Cornell's the backup there. But yeah, if Everson comes in for Preston and returns, that gives them a bit of a better chance at Ewood Park. So yeah, look, it's going to be blood and thunder. I don't see it being a game full of lovely football. It's not going to... Probably the opposite of pretty, but really important for both teams. You know, Preston win, their promotion hopes are alive. Blackburn win, they'll have a bit of a cushion at the bottom of the table. So it's a real biggie, this.
Yep, that's Friday at 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, on Sunday, we'll get what will be the last Steel City derby for at least a season. Might be a great deal longer than that. Sheffield United versus Sheffield Wednesday at Bramall Lane in what can only be labelled as a high noon showdown. A massive win for the Blades. We spoke about this game last week, Clarky, at Portsmouth. They win it with the last kick virtually from Andre Brooks. Time of recording, they're what, 6 points off the playoffs? That's doable, isn't it? Like, loads of experience in the dugout and on the pitch. Why not?
I think it's nuts that they're 6 points on the playoffs. They've been terrible for most of this season. They've lost so many matches, Sheffield United, but they can do it. And I've got a great stat for you here, because this is not applicable to the weekend. So basically, Sheffield United have been flat track bullies this season. They've polished off most of the bottom half this year, but against the top half, and this is why they should absolutely be nowhere near the playoffs, right? Against the current top 10, Sheffield United's record reads 1-1, drawn 1, lost 12. I mean, that team can't go up. But then you look at the players that they've got and you think, well, of course they can go up. You know, Cannon and Bamford up front, they went 4-4-2 the other day. They dropped Callum O'Hare, the number 10. Brand new central midfield unit, wasn't it, with Calvin Phillips alongside Gibril Samare. Bench was very strong. Good partnerships down the wings with Brooks and Siriki on the right and Burrows and Hamer on the left. So, yeah, they're a good team. But that record that I just read out tells you that they're short. There's something not right there. You can't be losing 12 of 14 against top half teams if you want to get to the Premier League. I mean, if they do go up, they get absolutely pumped, wouldn't they, Sheffield United? So yeah, look, let's see. They'll probably win this game. I mean, Wednesday haven't scored against the Blades in six derby matches. So you're going back a bit since Sheffield Wednesday actually scored a goal against them, let alone one.
Well, I mean, they hadn't scored a goal against anybody for a long time. They did at least do that against Millwall, but it was a 10th defeat in the red. They hadn't scored in the previous 10 games. I mean, this is it, isn't it? This is their only chance to give their supporters anything at all to take from this miserable season. And you think, well, the takeover will happen soon. This doesn't sound great. From the Times, prospective Sheffield Wednesday owner James Board being sued by a former business partner over his investment in the Spanish team Cordoba. He's heading up the consortium that is currently leading the race to buy the Owls after his group was granted preferred bidder status by administrators. I mean, that's a separate issue, I guess, but it's a worrying one. But yeah, this game, it's been the worst possible season. They're still way into the minuses in terms of their points. They've won one of 32 matches. It's an outside shot, but there's a real responsibility on the players to turn up for this, I think.
Yeah. No, they could. Obviously, the fans know they're going down and they might be down before the game even kicks off. But might be merciful. They wouldn't want to get put down by their bitter rivals, would they? So yeah, look, they know what's coming. Yeah, they just want moments, and this is the big moment, isn't it? That they can savor and enjoy if they go to Bramall Lane and turn them over. That would kind of make the season, you know, for them. So yeah, huge chance. But like you said, I wouldn't give them much hope. They haven't scored away from home since the 20th of December. The other day against Millwall, even though they nearly won the game, they made 98. Accurate passes. Anything under 100 is really bad, and it gets worse. They basically just went long. Over a third of their passes were long, which is in itself crazy high, and their pass accuracy was 47%, so more passes went astray than they did to a teammate. So yeah, Pedersen is just basically, he's going to boom it against Sheffield United. We'll see if they can nick a goal or two.
Let him bring back Josh Windass and Barry Bannon for this one, I think, just to give him a bit of a chance. But you suspect the Blades will smell blood there Sunday, high noon, as we say, for that one. All right, let's do some predictions, shall we? Sam sent his in last week. My goodness me, this was the one that Sam sent. I'd picked out some stinking games for. Well, it was reflected in the points. I got one. You got one, Adrian. Sam and I didn't get any.
Oh, dear.
1 point between the three of us from three games.
Yeah, that's miserable. Is that did I get the Preston Watford one right? Is that is
yes?
That,
you picked it as a 1-1 draw, so you got 1 point for that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, we're not doing ourselves any favours here, are we?
Yeah, and also I feel standard. Like you and I specifically haven't done ourselves any favours by allowing Sam to make his pick. So essentially, he's had first pick on all three here, which doesn't feel fair. But
I'll do a scores update next week. But yeah, I've extended my lead obviously a little bit
by one. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't find the numbers, but I'll get them ready for next week.
One more than last week, basically. Yeah. Stoke Leicester then. Sam's gone for a 2-1 Leicester win in this, which I think is mental. What are you saying?
Okay. I don't think it's that mental. I'm working on this game, so anyone wants to watch this on the Sky Sports Plus, I'll be on the co-coms. I think Leicester will have a new manager in place by the time that we kick off. Obviously, Gary Rowett has been heavily linked in the last 24 hours. And I think that new manager bounce might help them. Stoke aren't in good form. They're not scoring goals. I think this is could be a good game for Leicester. They won't keep a clean sheet. Obviously, they don't keep clean sheets. I'm going to go for it. It's a bit out there, but a 3-1 Leicester win. Bet 365. I think they're going to rock up there and turn them over.
Wow, incredible. Yeah, Gary Rowett, what a first game for that would be, of course, against one of the teams that he used to manage. I am going to say that this is going to be a 0-0 draw.
Cheers, mate.
Inspiring. Go very much against the grain of you two. Mansfield Lincoln. Well, I'm going to let you go first again here, Clarkie, just so you can talk about the fact that the place of my birth are going to be meeting the team of your heart in the next round of the FA Cup. It's Mansfield against Arsenal. That is such a brilliant reward for the Stags for that fantastic win against Burnley's reserves.
It wasn't really that reservey. It wasn't. There was a lot of all senior players. I don't want to knock them for that. That was a great win. A really, really good win.
Yes, I'm just joshing.
I know you are. I know. But they've got great goals, obviously, Louis Reed and Oates and... yeah, they had other chances. So yeah, they absolutely deserved a great draw. And yeah, look, it's a great draw for Mansfield. And I'm not going to pretend I didn't sort of punch the air into light thinking this is a good draw for Arsenal as well, because you know you'd expect Arsenal to avoid the banana skin, but it won't be easy. It'll be tricky, and you'll have to earn the right to play in that game. But yeah, for both teams, it was probably the perfect draw. And we need, I think, that with the sort of lowest ranked side left in the competition, that is if Port Vale go out, of course, they got Bristol City to come. Yeah, you want them to have a big boy at home. So yeah, great draw. And yeah, I think that goal from Louis Reed was just magnificent, wasn't it? What a way to win a cup tie.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. All right, I'm going to go first. I'm going to say that it's going to be a 2-2 draw against Lincoln at the weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I think, what has Sam got? Sam's gone.
He's gone 0-2.
0-2. I'm going to follow him in again. I do think it could be a bit after the Lord Mayor's show, back to league action. And Lincoln, it's a bigger game for Lincoln. Mansfield, really, a mid-table. They're not going up, they're not going down. It's all about that cup tie. For Lincoln, every game, every point matters. And I think they're going to bring it. They're in great form. Mansfield are defending fabulously at the moment. They're not letting in many goals at all. So they'll make it hard. Mansfield 0, Lincoln 1.
Do you know what the Lord Mayor's show is?
No.
You know, every year there's a new Lord Mayor of London who is appointed. So there's a public place that takes place as their inauguration ceremony reflects that this is once one of the most prominent offices in England. Dates back all the way to the 13th century. Wow. I did see it on telly last year, you know, that it was advertised, and I thought, oh, I wonder what's on after. like Country File or something like that. So yeah, maybe tune in for the whole thing next year. Where were we? Bristol Rovers Grimsby, the Ian Holloway Derby. Who's going to win this one?
Well, Steve Evans, isn't it? I'm not backing Steve Evans. I'm going to go with Grimsby. Look, they did a good account of themselves against Wolves on a sort of mud patch of a pitch. And they've been defending really well lately. Lots of clean sheets. Rovers improving, doing just enough to keep their heads above water. But I think they'll get beat here. I think Bristol Rovers 0, Grimsby 2.
Okay, Sam, I got that as a 1-0 win for Bristol Rovers. Oh, sometimes I do this. I pick three draws and it never ever works. But I was thinking about, you know what, I'm going to go for it. Why not? 1-1. So I've gone 0-0, 2-2, 1-1, which is pleasing on the eye, if not something that's going to happen in reality. Yeah, but we shall see. I'll update you on that next week. Right, before we go, another reminder of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, it's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. We are going to finish, as ever, with our tweet of the week. It comes from Mansfield Town's Fraser Blake Tracy, and he is quote tweeting the official club account, which in all caps said, cup emoji, a historic FA Cup fourth round victory on the road, 3! Hands praise emoji. And Fraser has quote tweeted it saying, into the hat emoji, don't mind that at all one word, at Mansfield Town, yellow heart emoji, blue heart emoji. This strikes me, Clarky, as a classic bashed out, not long after full time, maybe as you get on the coach, because there's two elements to that. There's obviously at and all, not having a space in between them. But this is something that I fall foul of all the time, and one of the reasons why I'm so pleased WhatsApp has added an edit function. You go to put the emoji in that you want, and you end up leaving the word in next to the emoji too. We've all been there.
Yeah, it's disappointing. A lack of care, a lack of attention. I think attention to detail as a footballer is important. So, you know, I'd question that, Fraser. You know, we've got to do better. But yeah, I wonder. I mean, 6:14 it was timed at, wasn't it? I think the tweet. It's on the coach, isn't it? He smashed it out. I like the hat emoji. It's quite a funny hat. A
couple of beers down at that point, maybe, then, in mitigation.
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I mean, if it was back in the 90s, guaranteed. I mean, many an away day we'd stop and after a good away win and get a crate from the local Asda or Tesco's or
Nigel Clough's still sanctioning that. He's definitely sanctioning that.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's only right. You just knocked out a Premier League team out of the FA Cup. Of course you're going to get on the beers. And yeah, I'm all for that. Big part of the camaraderie that you need. You know, obviously you don't want the players boozing all the time, but yeah, it's a big part of knitting together the group. So yeah, decent tweet apart from the grammatical error. And yeah, look forward to sort of working on that game, Mansfield against Arsenal. It's going to be fun.
I noticed that his mum is in the replies. Mandy, congratulations, party emoji, and well done to you all. Two kisses. That is exactly the sort of thing that my mum would do on Twitter.
What,
well.
What, rather than text you, she would reply to the
tweet?
Oh,
she'd do both. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think my parents have got social media accounts. No.
It's not used with any great effectiveness. Don't get me wrong, but she has a go, and that's all that matters. Just like Blake Tracy. Yeah, you gotta love it. All right, that's where we'll leave things for today. Then Sam will be back with us next week. Thanks to Ian Danta for joining us early, and to Adrian, of course, for his expertise. But mostly to you for listening. If you liked it, tell a friend, leave us a nice review, Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. We would surely appreciate it. For now, though, it's goodbye.